Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that pits two movies with something in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. This week, in the red corner, Kevin Costner finds himself in a love triangle surrounded by America's most famous diamond, the baseball field, as he and Tim Robbins vie for the affections of Susan Sarandon in 1988's Bull Durham. While in the blue corner, Kevin Costner is putting himself in the center of another love triangle. This time, he's trying to steal Don Johnson's birdie by winning the US Open from 1996. It's Tin Cup.
After 12 years in the minor leagues, I don't try out. Besides, I don't believe in quantum physics when it comes to matters of the heart.
What do you believe in then?
Well, I believe in the soul. The cock, the pussy, the small of a woman's back, the hanging curveball, high fiber, good scotch, that the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, softcore pornography, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days. Good night.
Oh, my. Yeah! You must think I'm such a loser, lousy driving range pro.
Local legend Roy Tin Cup McAvoy, the best player to never hit the big time.
It's an easy game, this golf.
Wasn't going anywhere.
Oh. It's got to be the woman.
I thought you said it was a virus.
Well, a woman can have the same effect.
But ever since Dr. Molly Griswold got inside his head...
I think I'm in love with you.
He's been changing his whole approach.
So it's a sexy sporting showdown this week, but which film will take home the trophy? Which will be victorious? Let's find out. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. I'm just happy to be here. I hope I can help the podcast. I just want to give it my best shot, and the good Lord willing, things will work out. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
Woo!
Yay!
How are you both?
Good.
Excellent. Any news? How was your Halloween?
It was really nice.
Yep.
Yeah, I told you I drank Midori sours.
Which you said were awful.
They're not as delicious. Partially it's because I haven't had Midori since I was about 16, and I had...
Didn't know you could still get it.
Yeah, Amazon provides.
Right.
Did you ever have, it's vile, I can't remember what it was even called, maybe like a frog? Or it's like Bailey's and a shot of Midori in it and the Bailey's curdles. It's fucking disgusting.
No, we had a different version of that where you put the Sambuca in, then a layer of Bailey's at the top, and then you drop a bit of grenadine through the centre and it pulls the Bailey's down and suspends the grenadine clear in the Sambuca, and it was called a test tube baby. You asked.
Oh, the 90s. Yeah, but then I haven't had Midori since then, so there was a little bit of reflux when I drank it, but I got into it. It was all right.
All right, Chris, good Halloween.
It was a week ago now.
Excellent. Welcome to part one of Bull Durham versus Tin Cup. These were my choices this week.
They really were.
What was I thinking? Me? Oh,
So I've been nervous all week because obviously I might have pushed you in this direction, and being that they're both sporty movies, I'm a bit scared. Did you have horrible weeks watching these, or was it okay?
Oh, honestly, one of them I'm secretly in love with.
Okay, yeah. This is exciting.
One of them I'm secretly in love with as well. How do you feel about the other one?
I think it might be one of the worst things I've ever seen.
That's how I feel as
well. Amazing, hooray. Oh,
wow. Interesting. Well, I have never seen either of these films, but I do love a new movie that I've missed before. It's an empty space on my movie CV. I love Costner. You know I love a sports drama. Big fan of baseball as well. So I was excited to see these. Excited to see these. I hope you enjoyed them as well when you did your homework. So the clue I gave on last week's show was the cost of love is playing the game. And if you thought that was bad, Chris followed that up on Twitter with
a video of us in a little love triangle trying to win Vicky's heart.
I forgot about that.
Trying to win Vicky's heart.
Oh, God.
And she couldn't decide between the pair of us.
New rule.
This is
do the video,
rule.
Then drink. Do not drink and do the video.
The thing is, I remember you doing a video, but I don't remember me having anything to do with it.
You're not in it. You're just at the far side of the camera guy. Right, are you fucking with me?
You're pranking me. He's not.
You are too. You wouldn't accept that this was actually the clue because it was that bad. And it also goes on far too long. We need to put a stop on how long the clues on Twitter are, because that was, for want of a better term, a long form video. Your guesses were found on the digital sports field. It is our Twitter at ClashPod. We're also on Instagram and TikTok at ClashPod with loads of saucy extras and videos from the show. And if you're in the business for a little extra clash, completely free of charge, why not check out our YouTube channel for some lovely videos from the show with some of the best bits of clashing from the last few years. Just search Clash of the Titles on YouTube. It's all very nice. So, guesses-wise, you know what happened, Chris?
One person,
which means what?
We nailed it.
Somehow.
Wow.
Somehow.
Those clues were perfect.
Well, there we are.
Somehow, those clues were perfect. So well done to our winner, Tim Parks, a first-time winner, I believe. Congratulations, Tim. Your prize is a shower shoe covered in fungus. I'd love to say it's the one you've seen in Bull Durham. It's not. It's one Vicky found at a local swimming bath. Send us your address and we'll get that prize to you ASAP. Connection section. I'll start. Kevin Costner.
Ron Shelton. Oh, Kevin Costner, if you have sex with him, you will fall out of something or off something. Out of bed or off a sofa.
Oh, yeah.
Very specific.
I mean, so he's a clumsy lover.
You see, though, in Ron Shelton, there's a lot of similarities and he's using a lot of the same stories, tricks, plot lines.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on here, I think, that's the same.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, they learn the same sporting lesson, don't they, to stop thinking.
Don't think, yeah. Yeah. Poetry's in both of them.
Heroes who talk to themselves / psych themselves up.
Don't get me started. They both
they both end up with records they don't want. The most home runs in the minor leagues and the most shots on a single hole in a major.
But does he not want it? I think he does want it in Bull Durham.
Yeah.
Secretly.
Stars who adopt fake humility when on TV. Both Tim Robbins, he's taught to do it, and Don Johnson is all about
nice
the fake
one.
Humility.
Yeah.
Costner hits a ball with a baseball bat in both movies.
True. In the Happy Gilmore segment.
They're both about women who are with the wrong guy at the start of the movie. Ron Shelton said they're both about 12-year-old boys. I think that's kind of true.
Okay.
In that both the characters are children.
Right, okay. Yeah. Any more?
Both got gambling, betting sidelines in them. There's a lot. Ron's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And they both had different working titles that were much worse than the titles they ended up with.
Go on.
Player Yet to Be Named was Bull Durham's working title.
Right.
And The Eyes of Eagles was Tin Cups, which is really bad.
Wow.
That's brilliant. You know when you hear the title of a movie and your brain immediately goes, oh, there are so many ways you could turn that into a great pitch. The Eyes of an Eagle. Brilliant. Okay, so on Thursday, Chris is going to be dealing with the Eyes of an Eagle, which means today V is hopefully going to explain the rules of baseball to us. So by the end of the show, we'll all be fluent in both love and what an RBI is. V takes on a journey.
Hi, I'm Annie Savoy and I'm a groupie, but don't judge me because I also love Susan Sontag, so I'm way more complicated than you think, also feminism. Hi, I'm Crash Davies, and I'm waging a war with myself over talent, longevity, and legacy, but I hate Susan Sontag, so I'm way more chill than you think. Also, the irresistible lure of a gorgeous, unreconstructed man. Hi, I'm Susan Sontag, and I'm puzzled I get mentioned multiple times in a sports movie to overtly telegraph the hidden depths of people who love sex and sports. Like sex and sports might be considered shallow without me. Anyway, Annie and Crash have to get Nuke ready for the major leagues and use a classic pincer movement of shagging him and calling him names, which does work actually, because the brilliant thing about sports movies is it's super easy to depict change. Did man throw a ball good? Did man hit ball good? Man has changed. You don't need a voiceover or a lengthy chat with yourself. This film does both though. But just before I died of rage about being so profoundly patronised by a movie that is tripping over itself to show me its big boy clever pants, hello Walt Whitman and William Blake, I realised the greatest sports movie ever made is actually a rom-com more than it is a sports movie, and so I forgive it 100% because of my rom-com blind spot, although it loses points for missing out on several obvious reach-around opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I really thought about this time is this isn't a sports movie. This is a rom-com because obviously the last half hour, there's no more sport.
No.
We're just done with it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm lucky. I'm going to talk about it like it's a rom-com, which...
Sure. Yeah, I think that's I think that's thoroughly valid.
It is. Until Chris inducted me into the Selhurst Park Massive and Crystal Palace, baseball was the only sport I ever loved. Like, I went to Yankee Stadium once and went... This is my sport. Yeah. I finally found the sport. I can converse with men about sport if they like baseball, which very few people do in this country. But like, so, and you know, Moneyball's my favorite, one of my favorite films ever. So I was so excited about this. A baseball sports drama with a bit of rom-com. It ain't that at all. No. There's no fucking baseball in this piece of shit.
Oh no, I can't believe that we're the inverse. Yep. I can't believe it.
Sitting here being very quiet because I had no clue.
I can't believe you think Tin Cup is good. You're mental.
No, this is going to be fun.
Tin Cup is great.
Oh my days. Mm. It's also my first time watch. And when you mentioned it, I've heard of it and I knew about it and I knew it was about baseball and it just fell off the radar kind of thing. Then I read the premise didn't skip to the end, just before I started watching it.
See, what is it with you and reading about the movie before you watch
it? Just very lightly, just to know what I'm getting into. So then it was like, Annie Savoy is a groupie. And I was like, fuck it, I'm out. Like, no way, no way are you going to get me on board with a groupie. I've never understood groupies. It's good for them, whatever, but I don't get it. Like, I do not understand the pull of it or the lore or why you would want to do that. Like, it's not because of the sex, but just because everything I read is like, oh, being a groupie is cool because it's like proximity to power. And I don't get that because I would just want that power for myself. I don't want to be close to it. I want to have it. So being a groupie is not
good. Now we get podcast groupies. You're into that.
Well, specifically, I mean, yeah, obviously.
I will say the specific Vicky Clash Pod groupies, they're okay, right? Are they getting a pass? How does this work?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You have groupies.
Yeah, you do.
And it feels like you're sort of undermining their groupiness.
Groupiness?
That's wrong.
All right, listen. Obviously, as I've just said, I want the power for myself. Why do I want that power? So I can have groupies. Yeah?
Right.
I don't want to be a groupie. I don't want to be anybody's groupie.
So you're happy for groupies to exist and be your groupies?
100%. Yeah, okay. I just don't want to be one.
Right.
I want to be on the other side of that. It's also like when someone, I mean, it doesn't happen very much, I guess, these days, but like when you talk about, well, through the ages, like so-and-so was someone's muse and it's like, oh, that's cool. I would hate that. Why would you want to be the muse rather than the person that was struck with the talent kind of thing? Like it's a portrait. Okay. You can have both, obviously, but it's just groupies is never something I've really understood.
There's never a band you loved that much.
Yeah, of course, but I would want to be that person. I don't want to shag that person.
All right.
All right, fine. I want to do both, but I don't want to do one over the other.
Can't.
Okay, anyway, we can't keep talking about groupies. So this is the first time I've seen this film. You have also established, you, Alex, have never seen it.
Yeah.
Chris, what about you?
Well, as I said, there's loads of Ron Shelton interviews about this film because of this book he published last year or the year before about the making of the film. And so in one interview, I was really interested in him saying that he hates to admit it, but he loves good reviews. The critics mean a lot to him because that's how people find his movies. He's one of the only filmmakers that's reliant on critics and good reviews. And that's exactly how I found Bull Durham. The year that Empire started was 89. And I think the second or third issue, Bull Durham came out on video and they gave it this incredible review. And I thought, oh, I've got to see that. Whereas I wouldn't have normally gone to see, watched a Kevin Costner baseball movie because Kevin Costner wasn't a big star yet. And I wasn't interested in baseball. So I watched off the back of that and I didn't really enjoy it because it's not a film rather for a 12-year-old boy, really. No.
No.
And
no.
So I was...
Maybe that's why I didn't get it.
And so I was super keen to revisit it, because I haven't over the years as a grown-up. And I think both of these films hit a little different when you're in your 40s versus when you're a teenager, which is how old I was when I watched both of them.
Yeah, I'm glad I watched it now. So speaking of reviews, that's a great segue for me into the background. Thanks, I got the nod.
Wow. I didn't even see it. I was looking straight at you.
Have I got rude? Yeah. That's really powerful.
You have.
I think he winked.
And a thumbs Sorry. Up.
Jesus.
What's got into you? Why are you doing this? What's going on?
I don't like that.
No,
weird. That's too earnest. Don't do that. All right, fine. So, like Chris has said, a lot of this is in this book that was released July this year called The Church of Baseball. I haven't read it, but you should. So this film is written and directed by Ron Shelton. He was a minor league baseball player. He played for 5 years and then he quit because he realised he wasn't going to make it to the majors. And he was, and then I think there was a strike or a, yeah, there was, the majors were going to strike.
Right. Okay.
So he started thinking about what.
Strike is a weird term to use.
Because they were going to stop working. Sorry.
There will have been many strikes.
What do they call a strike? They were going to do a walkout?
Fine.
Okay. So he started to consider his future under those conditions anyway. And then once they decided not to do the walkout, he's like, I've kind of already made the decision to leave, so I'll leave. And then he starts writing. He co-wrote Under Fire, which I thought we'd done, but we haven't done, have we? And then something called The Best of Times, which I'd never heard of.
Desperate to see that. You cannot see that in the UK.
I've never heard of it.
It's Kurt Russell and Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And it's a sports movie as well. Yeah. But it wasn't a hit.
And importantly, on Under Fire and The Best of Times, he did second unit direction. So then he uses his experience. I heard it was called The Player to be Named Later. What did you... You said The Player Yet to be Named. But anyway...
Words to that effect.
Nonetheless. But the Player to be Named Later, you know this, Alex, because of your expertise around the baseball game.
Yep.
Is a real thing.
Yep.
I don't really get what it means. Oh, do you not know?
No.
All right, fine.
Let me just clarify.
Yeah.
I kind of enjoyed watching it, but that's where it ended.
Do you know the rules or not?
But you can figure out what that. You can figure out what. I mean, I don't know, but I can figure out what it is.
Yeah, the two clubs decide to make a trade. They just haven't said who they're going to trade, and then whatever. All right. So anyway, The Player to be Named Later, that was also about a pitcher and a catcher. But then Ron Shelton's like, I'm going to try and do this from a woman's perspective. And so he creates Annie Savoy, this groupie. And then the rest of it falls into place from there.
The other thing I heard him say, that in the initial pitch, when he got in the room, he had catcher, pitcher, woman's point of view.
Yeah.
And Lysistrata.
But then he's like, oh, the studio's knocked it back. It's like, maybe don't go around saying I've got a Greek tragedy, but it's baseball. Just say it's about baseball. So
Alex, Lysistrata is the Greek tragedy where the women decided to stop having sex with the men until they stopped war.
War, yeah. So it's a comedy, but it's...
Well, I mean, it's a great concept, and that was part of the idea here. And, you know, there is a point where someone stops having sex with someone else for a period of time. And
yes.
It obviously changed, but... No, he said that's what got them interested in the interview I heard.
Yeah.
The Lysistrata angle.
Yeah. Nonetheless, no one wants it. So it does the rounds and then he gets Kevin Costner and then still no one cares. And so this is what I was saying before about the review. Still no one is interested. Then Orion, who have the script, who've had it like 3 times by now or something, they see a review, just a review of No Way Out. Mm. And that review in the New York Times says that Kevin Costner is going to be massive. So Ron Shelton says, Orion are like, oh, we've got his, because Kevin Costner is attached to.
Had he not
Calder.
Done The Untouchables at this point?
He had done The Untouchables, yeah.
Which was a massive hit.
I know.
I don't understand the timeline.
I don't get it either.
But I think it was only the year before The Untouchables.
Right.
And so it might not have come out when they're trying to get this off the ground.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's all about the same timeline, No Way Out and Untouchables and then this.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, basically, he's going to be a huge star. They've got this script to which he's attached. So they've got his next film if they want it. So they do want it. But it's going to be super low budget. Ron Shelton can direct. He's got creative control. It's fine. They're not going to be massively involved. I don't think they had very high expectations. And they didn't really like it as well. So you've got Tim Robbins as Ebby, Calvin, Nuke, Lelouch.
Real name.
Is
when
it?
He was when he was writing it, he was eating dinner somewhere, and the waiter came over and said, "Hi, I'm whatever that name
all
is."
That, yeah.
But my friends called me Nuke, and he was like, "I'm having all of that."
You've got so many other good names. So you, Chris, told me last week, you were like, oh, have you read the story about Anthony Michael Hall?
Right, so what is this story? Because I couldn't find it. And it was the first thing I looked up.
I'll tell you what I found. It's not that explosive. It's just very rude. It's just super bad
manners. It's not explosive. It's just rude. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So they don't want Tim Robbins. The studio don't want Tim Robbins. They want Charlie Sheen. He signed on to do another baseball movie, the name of which I've forgotten. Anyway, that's not going to happen.
Major League.
Thank you. So then it's all about Anthony Michael Hall. So they go to meet him. He's half an hour late. I don't think that's such a big deal, but whatever. Yeah. And then he sits down and he's like, yeah, I haven't read it.
He's brought a posse with him as well.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he said he was with eight dudes to this meeting. Yeah.
He was doing the voice he loved so much in Weird Science.
Yeah, that might have been a challenge. Mm. So anyway, he sends him away, go away, come back again, comes back again and says, yeah, but I've read half of it this time. Which is pretty funny.
That's brilliant.
I know.
second time round.
Yeah, I've done half and it's not even that long or hard to read most of his voiceover, which is really easy to read. So anyway, that's how you end up with Tim Robbins basically. And then Sue,
thank God.
Yeah.
You know, Tim Robbins, and it helped launch his career, but he's great here. And Anthony Michael Hall would have been fine, but he wouldn't have been as likeable. He's not got the likability that Tim Robbins has.
Tim Robbins is really, really good in this, and it's a very generous performance, I think, because the other two are going to steal it from you, but it's kind of your story. So it's quite a generous thing to sort of step back and just inhabit this boyish persona and not try and do anything too grown up or grand or anything like
he
that.
He does talking to himself very well.
God, bloody hell. What, he after does. Shawshank also?
It's that bit where he's like, why are you calling me? I'm the one driving a Porsche.
The
he's
thing
good.
Is, I'm going to get it done really soon.
Right.
But
well, I'll wait.
All right. It's nothing. I'm just because I'm not going to go on about it. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. It goes on for too long. Everybody talks. I talk to myself.
What do you mean? Like, the voice, like Susan Sarandon, Annie's voiceover, or the players talking to themselves? Because they're kind of two different things.
They
She narrates the story.
Let's also throw into the mix, because Ron Shelton did In Your Head voiceover. So we got the holy trinity there of shitness. I don't mind opening with a voiceover. It's Susan Sarandon's voiceover, even though it goes on too long, because there's a lot of colour and texture there about what she's into. Mm. Fine. I do mind another three or four, and I do mind, as you know, her saying, what's right in front of me? At some point, she more or less literally says, when Nuke listened to Crash, he played well. I've just seen him fucking throw the ball.
Really?
So yeah.
Oh, you saw a scene about baseball in this? Because I didn't think I saw any.
And then, I don't like that. I think In Your Head voiceover is unacceptable because you've got an actor who can use their face and body in order to convey emotions. Right. Talking to yourself, I don't mind. But be realistic about it. People do talk to themselves. I do, but not for 2 or 3 minutes. Basically, that's all I've got to say about that.
All right.
So where are we? Susan Sarandon's in it. She's brilliant. And this is where Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon met. And I still can't believe that, because when I'm watching them during this, I'm like, you two should not be together. Do you not think? That's how good they are at not being right for each other.
And obviously, when it all went wrong and Ron Shelton said this was by far the worst experience of his professional career making this movie, it was hellish. That's what the book's about. This film that's become beloved, he had a very bad time. And one of the things the studio got angry about halfway through the film was they don't buy that Tim Robbins would sleep with Susan Sarandon.
No, so
when
he did.
I believe that, and like a year later, they were getting married.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But they
it's
thought.
Bananas.
But their notes were that she looked terrible. The studio said she looks really, really ugly in this
She's
film.
Insanely beautiful. In this.
And they said it's not sexy or funny or romantic, and you need to
wrong. Yeah. Wrong on all fronts.
Wrong about Susan Sarandon looking bad, but on all the other counts, absolutely right. It's not funny at all.
There are some funny bits.
No.
What about, is she called Millie? She's hilarious.
No, she's not.
She is. 97% on Rotten Tomatoes and the number one sports movie of all time, according to Sports Illustrated magazine.
But not about sports.
The sporting Bible.
Have you seen Tin Cup though, yeah?
What? Seriously though, maybe they haven't. You don't know.
It is long.
It is on the list.
Fucking brilliant.
It suggests they have.
It tested really badly. Really badly.
Yeah,
the studio fucking hated it.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
It's just not a good movie. It just meanders. I literally sat there and was like, I can't. My notes are a page long for this because I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to take from any of these moments. I don't like these people. It's amazing that you can make Kevin Costner not amazing. Like,
oh, this is exciting. because this worked. So there's some, I think there's some weird magic in this film. Because I should hate it. On paper, I should hate it.
When you came up to me outside, I was like, oh.
One of these is good.
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be a slam dunk this week. And
there's
then you
no
went, Baldara.
On
was like,
God's green
earth,
I thought we would disagree. A P.S. because it's about baseball as well. The exposition in Tin Cup, you should be sent to jail. Unreal.
Listen.
Do you realise that you, because you qualified for the thing? Yeah, no, he does fucking know, doesn't he? He's worked in golf his whole life.
Yeah.
So, but it's not all a big praise party for this film. I went on a huge journey. But when I go on those journeys, it's like a convert zeal, isn't it? So, you know, halfway through it, I was like, Chris has made a huge error. And I haven't even seen Tin Cup yet. But then I was like, oh my God. There's one line, which I'll get to, where everything flipped, the lights went on for me.
No.
I know.
Was it the end?
Actually, I'm going to do a fun thing. I'll tell you after a break. Yay! Oh my God!
All right, but don't celebrate, we're in the break.
So professional.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Okay, let's talk about the film, shall we? So, Annie Savoy believes in the Church of Baseball, and we know this because she tells us. So, fine, but not fine. But I've done it already. Like, the voiceover doesn't get a pass, just if you're interested.
Yeah, you said you were done with the voiceover.
Yeah,
no,
I'm done. That's it. Yeah, yeah, because it's boring. Everybody knows how I feel about it. And do you know what? It got nominated for an Oscar, so what the fuck do I know? Equals nothing.
Didn't win, though.
It didn't win.
Because a better film won. That's how it works, yeah. Rain Man,
yeah. Mm. Right, so bear in mind, I don't know anything about baseball and I don't regularly go to a stadia.
This is the perfect movie for you then.
No, but I found the pull of the stadium in the, you know, everyone's walking towards the centre of town, that sense of community. I think that is very special.
Minor leagues, though, the whole thing about exciting stuff is like a major league stadium and these huge, like cathedrals of sport. This is like... I didn't even know it was about minor league baseball.
Yeah,
oh, I like the local sporting aspect, and I liked how they sort of framed it, even the way she's dressed and the fact they're playing Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley.
Yeah.
And it just felt like they were trying to capture something from the past. I bet that doesn't exist anymore. I think if you go to minor league baseball now, it wouldn't look like that. But there's something, you know, the 80s and the 50s sometimes talk about, they were similar decades.
And there are scenes where you wouldn't be able to tell, especially because of the car she drives. Later on when she's with Millie, that's one scene where you're like, oh, that makes sense. Because she is dressed up sort of 50s style, but they've got a little boombox thing that's from the 80s. And he talks about having a sound system in his car that I can't remember what it is. Anyway.
I agree with you, Vicky. I like the way they capture that. I want to sit there and watch this on a lazy sort of Friday night.
Yeah. But also, so the groupie thing is important to me here because it's quite obvious what Annie is into. And it annoyed me at this point. And she does turn it around. But then she's like, but I like Walt Whitman and I like, you know, and I like Emily Dickinson. It's like, ugh, either, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a groupie, but I'm clever, so it's fine. Like, I found that really irritating.
I think he wrote her as a man. That's how he.
I think what he was trying to. I think what he was trying to do in quite a clumsy.
He wrote her as a man and then just changed her to a woman in the script. He was like, I'm not sure how to write one. I'll write a man.
I think a frog.
I think what they're trying to do in a clumsy way, though, is have this, the thing that they have in common is their love of words, because then when he gets his grand speech later, it's to do with literature, and it's well worded because they both have, this is the thing they have in common. Yeah. It's just a bit clumsy.
It's a bit clunky, yeah. But then, so groupiness, just, you can just cover this off for me, Alex. If she's a minor league groupie, does that make you dislike her? Because it's not even like running with the big dogs.
No, absolutely not. No. I don't have a problem with being a minor league groupie. I imagine it's easy to be a minor league groupie because you're closer to the players.
Oh, I see. Mm. Oh, that's a good point.
And he said that he hadn't, Shelton said that he hadn't been to the minor league since he stopped playing. He couldn't bear to. It brought back bad memories. And so he went back to see the Durham Bulls when he was researching this. And the women were literally passing notes like that to the players. Mm. And so that's easy. Bang, I'm having that.
Yeah, I love that bit with the note. We'll get there. So then Tim Robbins is Ebby Calvin Nuke / Meet LaLouche. And he's cocky and he's cute and he's boyish and he's got a $1 million arm and a 5-cent head. So that means...
I like that line.
Me too. He can throw, but he's a dumbass. So that's going to be the engine of the story. Then Kevin Costner walks in and it's such a weird scene. He just walks in. So it's like, because he's not a massive star. Like... You expect a bit of foregrounding, like he's on his way and he's gorgeous and whatever, but he just walks
in. Days of Thunder.
yeah, a little bit, yeah. But it's just like, oh, look, Kevin Costner's here. Brilliant. So he's here to like fix the kid kind of thing so he can go all the way. And then there's a weird moment where he's like, fuck this fucking game. But yeah, no problem, I'll do it.
Yeah, wait, he leaves. Yeah. He walks out, I'm not doing this. And of course, he's got no choice. He's like, he's at that point in his career where it's...
I can't believe they made him say, I'm too old for this shit. Because it's such a funny thing to hear now because it's such a cliche. But I don't know. He does it all right, I guess. So the boys, they are going to meet Annie. This is where she's so good. This is where I started to warm to her, where she says to Crash, do you want to dance? No, she says, do you want to dance or can you dance? And he says, no. And she says, how embarrassing. And so she's saying, I'm embarrassed for you. Mm. But you could obviously read it's like she's embarrassed that she asked him to dance and he basically said no. But she, the way she plays it, it's very
She's got all the power here.
Yeah.
She's fully in control.
So the lads, they go back to her house so she can choose between them. She takes one young lover every season. They have the best season of their lives and she teaches them things.
Yeah, so I was very good at one sport. I nearly got the England trial. So I was going, you know, I thought I was going all the way when I was a bit younger than him. Where are these women who fuck you to greatness? Why weren't they in Croydon?
Write that down, though, because there's something there. Surely this is basically Croydon, wherever this Durham...
It looks nicer than Croydon.
Listen to your giggle, you doofus. What are you doing? Oh, yeah, do they, though? They could, though, couldn't they? Amazing.
It's just Chris being so direct.
It is funny when you do that.
With a slight disappointment in his voice. Like, there really should be these women for Aim of Truth.
Yeah, entitlement. So this is, in rom-com structure, we've now got to do a Crash and Annie. They're so wrong for each other, but they're so right for each other. Mm. They're so different. It could never work. So you have to. We're going to do it through speeches. And what gets her going is that obviously he's walked out, which is always going to like ignite her interest over this sort of like big puppy dog thing that Tim Robbins is. But then Kevin Costner's got his speech, I believe, in the sweet spot, softcore and pornography. I don't really know what softcore and pornography is, but whatever.
It's better than hardcore pornography.
But what actually is it?
It's what they used to show when Channel 5 first launched.
You don't know what softcore pornography is?
Not really.
So what we get now is hardcore.
Yeah.
And softcore is what you'd have on the telly back in the day.
Yeah.
So the what were they called? The one with the chutney in?
Oh, the Red Shoe Diaries. The Red Shoe Diaries. Hills Bordello. Bravo.
9 and a Half Weeks. Two Moon Junction. All of this is softcore pornography because you don't see. You basically you're not going to see anything going anything else.
That is really it.
It really is it. Yeah.
Everything stays out of everything. So
who believes in that?
That's what I mean.
What's the point, man?
What is there to believe in?
Well, I think if you're going to believe in a kind of pornography, you should say softcore pornography.
No way, man.
It's weird to believe in our kind of pornography.
Look at you, like, little romantic. I never watch anything going in. I've got too much respect for women. sod off.
There's more plot in softcore pornography.
Okay.
Plot is really what it needs to be about. That's the arousing part.
Is it really?
It really is.
When the structure really comes
you
together.
I remember, maybe it was my age, but, you know, sneaking down, putting Bravo on and watching Beverly Hills Bordello. There was always a fucking story in there.
Okay.
It wasn't just stuff going in and out.
opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, obviously. And then I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days. What?
I mean, breathe through your nose. I like the bit where he goes, I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, because obviously he'd then go on to do JFK.
I'm surprised. I don't know how you feel. I was hoping you would have an opinion on the fact that he kicks off with, I believe in the cock and the pussy.
Oh, yeah. I felt so upset that it's Kevin Costner said that.
No, but he was quite a sexual being then. This stopped 5 years later.
Robin Hood wouldn't say that. It just upset me.
Yeah.
But also, believing in them, that's a weird thing to say. What do you mean when you... And then he's like, I believe in the small of a woman's back. And it's like, okay... Fine, whatever that means. But just to open, to turn around, in a rom-com, to turn around and say, the next thing I say is going to make you fall in love with me. And to open with that is like, okay.
To use that language on someone you've just met.
Yeah.
In front of a guest.
That's so true.
I liked, though, her calling their behaviour latent homosexuality being rechanneled.
Yeah.
I think she absolutely bosses them.
Yeah. So then we've got, I now know we're in a rom-com, and then I felt comfortable. Mm, and I like a sports movie. I do like a sports movie.
And that's
movie.
The end of Act One.
Yeah.
You've got Act One takes place over 5 hours in one evening, and I like it. I think it sets all the pieces up nicely.
Yeah. So now this is where it kicks up a gear in terms of its rom-com goodness, because I know I'm in a rom-com and my two romantic leads are set apart, which is necessary. That's the law. And then Annie writes Crash a Note with sporting advice. Because we've got this other, and then there's another subplot in there about what you mentioned before about Crash. If he gets 20 more home runs or something, he's got the minor league record, and then on and on. He doesn't really want it.
I mean, don't look to me.
Okay.
So
she writes him the note, and they're passing these notes, and then he writes a note back, and you can't quite see what it says, but you can see the word fuck. And I think it's meant to say, what does it say? Let's fuck sometime. And they send the note back, and then Millie's like, it says we want to make love, whatever. And it's like, you're not supposed to do that in a rom-com. You can't have these feelings all out. Once you've done the we're so right for each other, we're so wrong for each other, it all goes underground until the very final act. So it's so brilliant that he's like, I am still very much interested, obviously. And then you button that with the scene in the, what's it called, a batting cage, where they're practicing the swing. Brilliant.
Yep.
And he just says, is this going to happen or not? It's like, you can't do that in rom-coms. You have to pretend that you don't know, you don't care. Mm. And because he says it, and to be asked like that, I know you said it's not sexy and it's not hot, but if you're into that person and you both know where it's going, to be asked like that and then to say no, that's really hot. So I was like, this is brilliant. Like, I'm fully...
There's a maturity to the way these characters talk to each other because they aren't teenagers.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I like that.
Yeah. But she turns him down, so she's got this rule, you know, only one player a season or whatever it is, which is like daft, but it's fine because it's a rom-com. You just need this sort of pretend barrier kind of thing.
She's monogamous.
Yeah. And does he make the point here, which I did agree with, that she picks a young person so that she can boss them around, so they've both got sort of issues around.
Yes, and also because her problem is she's afraid of commitment.
Yeah.
And so she knows it will last for 1 year, 1 year only, and then she doesn't have to think about the future.
Yeah. So then we've got a road trip, which I love a road trip, and I love a montage. So a montage on a road trip is dreamy for me. Mm. Very, very good business. And then we find out that Crash was in the majors at some point, which is important later. Mm,
21 days.
But you look like you're going to say something.
No. Do you know what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to remember what order these scenes happened in.
Okay.
Literally, it was just all a mess.
Yeah. Well, listen to Vicky because she's doing them in order.
I literally am.
Because
she asked me if I was going to say something.
I'm saying like you were.
I was like concentrating because I remember there being a shot of a bus and there was a guitar on the bus. And then I was like, oh God, how close to the end are we?
Closer than in Tin Cup, where the through line is a fucking raggedy mess, quite frankly.
Yeah, but it kicks up a gear at the end.
Yeah, it does, sort of. Anyway, so Nuke is actually not improving, even though he's got Crash catching for him, giving him advice. And the team, they have their worst. This is the worst team for half a century. And then Nuke has a stress dream, which is very, very funny. But then he starts to listen. So he starts to wear this garter, which was Annie's suggestion. And when he's doing his talking to himself, he calls himself Meat, which he doesn't like being called, but it means he's been listening. And then he does, sporting term, good throws. it doesn't stop us getting a voiceover, which I've mentioned, where Annie says, when Newt listened to Crash, things went well. But, you know, it's her by this point, and I can forgive her. Like, she wears a fascinator to a baseball match. It's fine.
I like the bit where when Meat doesn't listen, Nuke/Meat doesn't listen to Crash, he tells the hitter what the ball coming his way is. That's so, that's so wrong, and actually funny.
It's funny the first time he does it, but when he does it the second time, I started feeling very angry. Loving sport as I do, it's such a betrayal to fuck over your own team.
Yeah, but he wasn't listening. Meat wasn't listening to him. Nuke had to listen. You listen to your catcher. The catcher knows best.
Yep. Doesn't he do that? Isn't there a moment like that in Tin Cup where Romeo tells someone, or even whatever his name is, tells someone? That's a repeated beat in Tin Cup anyway. Trust me. Alex has got pages and pages of notes, so I'm sure it will come up.
It'll come up, yeah, when we get to Tin Cup. Yep.
So Nuke now, at this point, he's off the sex, because he's putting that energy elsewhere.
Rechanneling.
And
he's breathing through his eyes like a Galapagos lava lizard.
He's respecting the streak, and you've got to respect the streak.
Yeah. But good rom-com energy there, because obviously Crash doesn't want him sleeping with Annie because he wants to sleep with her. So very good.
What's Crash more jealous of, do you think? The fact that Nuke is dicking Annie, or... his arm.
It's his arm. 100%. The arm is the only thing that brings him to violence. Not that he's sleeping with Annie. The punch is thrown because Hughes doesn't realise how good he is.
I guess that's the lesson he learns over the film, that actually Annie is more important than the arm by the end.
Okay. Or his career was at an end. So might as well.
What's left?
Yeah, go where the getting is good.
He really does wait until until absolutely no other team will let him play baseball in the fucking world. And he's like, hey, Annie.
Hey, oh my God, I've meant to call.
Yeah, I'm just sitting on a swing outside your house.
Have you seen anyone? I'm sitting on a swing outside. I love that.
I can't wait until we get to it. The final line is possibly but actually, I will give this movie something. The final line when we come to it is fucking hilarious.
I can't remember it.
Oh, wait, I've got it.
I love that bit where you've mentioned it, where Crash is teaching Tim Robbins about interview cliches. And then I wanted to ask you, Chris, you love sport.
Yes.
Does it not drive you mad that you, whenever, what's the point of a post-match interview? Like, what's the actual point?
I don't watch them because of what you're saying, because people talking cliches. And the odd one you might tune into, because every now and then you'll get a player that's got a personality and will listen and answer the question that's asked. Yeah. Or they'll be asked a question that's different as well because the interviewer's asked the same question.
Yeah.
But generally, I've got no interest in what they've got to say after the match.
I was curious. And I thought it was quite a modern phenomenon. On like media training and stuff like that, but this is obviously
guess not. So, in the 80s,
And the manager's more interesting though. Managers seem to be more character.
Yeah, but sometimes the managers will say things are purposely controversial to take the heat off their players, and so you get sort of the psychological stuff going on. But the players, they're just taught to try, as they say, as he's doing here, just to not say anything at all interesting, so you don't become the story, or what you've said doesn't become the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's also a fan thing as well. I mean, that's part of media training. The more opinions you have, the more likely you are to disagree with potential fans and the less fans you have.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
If it looks like someone's really lost their temper right at the end of the game and they've scored a couple of goals, then you would tune in for that interview, because when people are angry, that's when you get the good stuff.
Yeah. So there's a very funny scene here where Annie is trying to tempt Nuke back to bed. And she looks incredible. I just don't know what's wrong with people. When they see that, they're like, she's gross. Like a studio executive, like, what's wrong with you? What's actually wrong with you? So in order to do that, it doesn't quite work. I can't now remember the geography. Essentially, where we end up is she's like, if you could just take off this stocking, which you can't quite do, she's just basically trying to rub one out on his arm.
It's over breakfast on the kitchen table.
You just don't see that every day. I thought it was hilarious. Ron Shelton, I love this quote. I was like, there's so much you can take from it. He said, always make sex fun, even funny. So he said, in the 70s and 80s, everyone was trying to be out there with their movie sex scenes. And I started asking my friends, do you have fun with sex? They said, yeah, Americans, presumably. Well, why isn't it in the goddamn movie? And it's like, that is a very good point. Like, it's either very unrealistic or too realistic or very steamy. And that's all fine. But where we are, you can have fun with it. And that's very funny. And I think it's really well done. Well, now I've lost my place because I was getting het up.
Sex can be fun, though. That's nice.
Of course.
It's a great moment to just take a breather on while people absorb that. Yeah, they're a fun sex.
And I think when he was talking about that specifically, it's about the crash sex scene, because it's not the normal sex scene,
milk
is it?
Milk goes everywhere.
It's the painting of the toenails.
Yeah, that's gross.
Oh, that one. Okay. Yeah. The bit on the breakfast bar where everything
Well, it's all
goes...
part of the same session.
Yeah, I know. Multiple sex scenes. A sex montage.
A sex montage. Yeah, you don't see that every day.
You don't.
So we're at the point in a rom-com where we have our legally mandated, the argument where we're not really arguing, we're shagging, but we're arguing kind of thing between Annie and Crash. So you know how I feel about these scenes. Like, when they're right, they're fucking brilliant because they're transportive and they are aspirational, because you do want that in your life, and I want to be able to write that and that back and forth, and then it delivers on the story, it delivers on the characters, the language reels you in, you're rooting for them. It's beautiful when it's done brilliantly, and it's hard as balls to do. Mm. I think this one just about works, but there are moments where the wheels come off it a little bit. I don't quite believe in the... I think it's maybe the ending where it all gets a bit lower and a bit... When he's being rude to her, I'm into it, because I do think there are big questions about a groupie. When he's like, aren't you dressed a bit fancy for this? Which is him basically saying, like, what the fuck do you think you're doing? But it's because he's well into it as well. So, you know, you sort of throw back the thing that
And this is the moment where she realises she wants him.
Which I don't like. She should have realised that.
I thought you wouldn't like that.
I don't like it. No. Yeah, why do I not like it?
I don't know, because he's nasty to her and she's like, now I want him.
Yeah,
he literally kicks her out of his house. He says, I still want you to leave.
Because she knew she did, to me, when they were in the batting cage, and this has all been a big dance to get to this point. It shouldn't be this big realisation. She should have a zinger there and leave, kind of thing. Mm. So that's the only moment where I was like, I'm not sure. It doesn't end with a kiss, which is good. These scenes do tend to end with a kiss, like a surprised quick kiss, and then a sort of that's enough for now thing, and then they'll come back to it. The fact that it doesn't at all, I think, gives it is to its credit. Mm. But stop going on about William Blake. You're clever. We get it. It's enough of this.
It's weird, isn't it? I think I just expected more traditional rom-com beats in this, because there's a bit coming up where Newt comes round with his dad, and then it's like I think they've lost a game or something, but he wants to sleep with Annie again.
Yeah.
And she is like, no, 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 no. You need to concentrate on the majors, because he gets the call about the majors. She's like, no, 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 you need to focus on that. And she's basically, she doesn't want to sleep with him anymore because she's into Crash.
Yeah.
And so she uses this idea of him getting the place in the majors to sort of
get rid of him.
To me, he needs to then find out that she did that because she wanted to sleep with Crash.
Yeah.
And then him and Crash, Newt and Crash, can have a bit of a fucking face-off, because he's like, you know? And you never get that. It's like those two are just mates from start to finish.
They offer it,
with a little bit of sort of like, will you listen to me? Okay,
Have a fight in the next scene.
But not a real fight. It's like he throws a punch and then he's like, oh, can you help me up? And they're back together again. It's like you sort of, it's these two suitors interested in the same woman. It just feels strange to me that they never go head to head about Annie at any point.
Because Newt isn't really, when she breaks up with him, he's not upset. He's like, oh, really? But that's fine. It's time for him to move on, and he knows
it. Sure, but he has been lied to about why she's like breaking up with him. That would still be annoying.
I mean, she literally said Crash's name while she was having sex with Newt, and he was pretty chill about it.
See, that's stupid, which is bewildering.
He's a meathead, hence meat.
Yeah. So before we get there, though, Millie and Jimmy are getting married. This is the line I mentioned before. I'll try and be quick, because I've got a lot to say about it. So I'm still not into this groupie thing. I still don't. It's something I've never understood, and it's going to take a lot to convince me. But when Annie is helping Millie with her dress, and she says, do I deserve to wear white? And Annie says, we all do. And then I just got it. The lights went on, the kind of thing.
So the last 15 minutes, you were like, actually.
No, I'm following a rom-com, but I'm still holding a piece of myself in reserve, because I'm like, I don't understand you as a character. I don't understand what a groupie is or does, right?
Right, okay.
When she says, we all do, she is so pure. She could be Jade. She could have a really funny line there about, well, why would I want to wear white? I tried that. Well, whatever. Insert joke here. Mm. She doesn't. She isn't jaded. She has a quest for pleasure, which is really, really pure. And I think probably some groupies do have self-esteem challenges related to treatment in their lives by other people. And that has always been hanging over her a bit for me. Like, she might have this thing. She's like, the reason I do this is because of, insert bad story here.
Mm.
But it's not. She just likes sex. And it hasn't coloured her worldview, and she isn't jaded and dark and broken about it. That is just what she wants. And yes, she is, Crash is right that she gets to boss people around, but that's the only fly in that ointment, and that's quite a sweet and innocent fly when it could be, I was abused by several men in my life and now I do this as revenge kind of thing. Mm. And that's the line where I was like, she deserves white and she is a big enough person to think that you do too. Isn't that lovely? It's magic. I thought that just changed the rest of the film for me, which is just as well because it's about to get a bit bad at the end.
So why do you think it gets bad at the end?
I think it needs to end. Well, so like you said, we have the wedding, then Crash is fired. Then they have the fight. Mm. Mm. I like the fight, but like you say, it's a bit of a non-fight.
And weirdly, they shot it in a brothel.
Oh, is that what that is?
They shot it in a brothel. And when he was just about to start editing it, Shelton was like, I've really messed up here. These guys just shouldn't be in a brothel. This is a romantic comedy. And so he went back to you and said, I have to reshoot this one scene. And they said, well, what do you need to change? And he said, I don't need to change anything. He didn't change a single word because in the brothel, Roy's playing a piano for some reason and Newt tries to talk to him. Sorry, Crash. Newt tries to talk to him and he says, I'm playing. And now it's a pool cue.
Yeah.
But the scene is identical.
Oh,
it's just in a different setting because, I mean, the reality is, I guess these guys are hanging out in brothels maybe, but it you don't really want to see it in your romantic comedy.
Yeah.
So it was a fun, like, there were sex workers around and everything. That's,
yes.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah,
right,
it's a brothel. Okay. That's what brothels are.
I've heard of them.
Yeah.
No, it was empty.
But it looked like what you would recognise as a brothel.
You meant they shot it in a brothel.
It had red curtains.
No. The characters were visiting
right,
the brothel.
Right, I thought you meant it was a brothel, but I was like, well, it didn't. Well, I wouldn't have known it was a brothel. Crash, it was just had a pool table in it.
Crash was playing piano in a brothel, which, again, I'd quite like to see that cutscene.
So here we go. This is what you were asking. So then Crash is fired. That's super rough. But then he goes around to Annie's house. And then he's undressing her. You get the small of the back callback. And he can undo stockings. End the film. End the film right there. It doesn't matter. You haven't got an act three anyway. So just have the balls to end it there. Roll credits. The film has ended. We've ended. Oh, no, we haven't ended.
No, we haven't.
Oh, no. It's bad. So I don't care about the... Right, there's no act three. We did Tootsie. There's no act three in Tootsie. None at all. She finds out. He says, sorry, end film. It takes less than 5 minutes. Like, that's, so it's fine. You can do it. But to me, it's like someone going, oh, Ron, there's no act three. He's like, it's all right. I can add on 15 minutes with a bit of shagging. So we get falling out of bed sex, bath sex, a pedicure, which I just...
You like or don't like?
I don't like it.
Right, okay.
I just think...
You surprised? I thought Vicky was going to like that.
I mean, a little bit.
I like having a pedicure.
This subservience of the man to the woman.
It's more like, it just seems like they're supposed to be so into each other, so you should just be having sex. Where is the time out for the painting of the toenails?
I think there's two sex scenes before it and one sex scene after it, so you need a time out, surely. I don't know. I'm not speaking for you. I'm just saying most people would probably want a time out. I thought the joke was that it's meant to look like he's doing... Because she's tied up.
Yeah, I know what it's meant to look
like.
Yeah.
I think that is a joke. But also, I think there are women out there who'll be like, oh.
Oh, bless him.
Don't you think?
No, I do think that, yeah.
That would be appealing to...
I don't want my lover to be painting. I want a professional to be doing that. I don't want it to be smudgy. I don't want it to be all claggy. Like, I want it to look good. So don't get some boo to do it.
Your feet should only be touched by professionals.
No, it's not what I think. Yeah. I just think, you know, well, it would be free, I guess. So that's the flip side. That's 35 quid you haven't had to spend.
How much it cost of a pedicure?
Oh, mate, I tell you what, that's the cheapest. You can go wild. You can
What do they do? It's not just painting the nails because they do all
just
the
just before I go through what they do to you. Is this a fetish thing? Because if I start talking and you look away,
am I Quentin Tarantino?
No, it's just, you know, like, you love the thing you hate, the thing you love.
I can visualize feet in my head and not be repulsed. It's only if I was to see a pedicure actually taking place. It's like worse than watching I don't know that Serbian movie. So
do you really want me to tell you what they do?
Yeah.
What's that Serbian movie called?
That Serbian film.
Okay.
What is it called? That Serbian movie. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's called that. Yeah, I get the joke.
So tell me.
They soak your feet. Then they...
Do they put the little fish on?
No, I wouldn't do that. I think that's a health hazard. I think that's unclean.
Oh, really?
You don't know where those fish have been? Well, you know where they've been. They've been on other people's feet.
It's really obvious where they've been.
I don't think that's weird.
They don't let them out at the end of the day. They come back for the following day's work.
You clock off now, lads.
Just make sure you're back at eight and clean your teeth. Clean your bloody teeth.
I mean, they've been on other people's feet. I'm not mad. You have to have clean instruments. Like, this will make you feel sick.
Apologies in advance, listeners.
Every person's had a pedicure and knows this. If you are paying for a good one and it's not just like polish, as in paint, they get basically a razor and they run it down your feet and then all the skin comes off in like a coil. And
the underside?
Yeah, everywhere. Like on your heel, here, on your toes, all that hard stuff. They don't scrub it off. They strip it. Like stripping wallpaper. And then it coils up in like a little paper ball. And then they put it in the bin. And then it's all nice. And then it's all lotions and massage and paint, and it's very nice. But there's a serious skin removal process that goes on for your £35.
Okay.
There you go.
I think you should have one.
I think you should have a pedicure for your next birthday treat and overcome this madness, frankly.
Okay.
Anyway, God, where were we? So, yeah. But anyway, the film hasn't ended there, and then they have all this sex, and then it still doesn't end because then he fucks off. Which, like, then I can't believe that. Then we get another voiceover.
With a note. Doesn't say bye, remember?
And she's like, I had a fair few of those in my time. And it's like, okay, fine.
She's so fucking cool with everything.
He's going off to play his last ever games, isn't he?
Yes.
He doesn't
know that.
He doesn't know. It's not like he's been given an offer, because that one, at least,
he's going to try.
He's chancing it.
And I quite like that, when it's you're just your last shot.
Yep.
I respect it. And I think she does. I think she respects it as well.
It's a bit sad. I think she's a very powerful character. And when she's basically been dumped and she's just sitting back at the game, I start to feel sorry for her, and I don't like that feeling, because I need her to be like, if she's going to be this strong for this much of the film, it's a shame that that's slightly undermined in the last like 5 minutes.
Sure.
Or whatever.
But haven't they both? I mean, he's felt sorry for himself for the whole movie.
Yeah.
I guess it's... Yeah, maybe she doesn't need this moment.
And then I forgive the voiceover towards the end because she's smoking bifters off the floor. So I don't mind that one bit, obviously. It's so wrong. You just don't see that in a female character very often. She's like, oh, brilliant. Do you know what I mean? I have these fantasies. I don't want this to happen. But if I lived alone, I wouldn't have her daycare. I think her daycare is very fussy. But I could see me crawling around on the floor, finding an old bit of reefer and just being chuffed to bits and just leaning against a kitchen cupboard and having that.
Is it a reefer, though?
Yeah. How do you know?
I think it's a cigarette.
I don't think it's a cigarette.
Because it makes no sense. Like, you'd need to see that she'd run out of tobacco at that point, and that's why she was smoking it off the fucking floor like a weirdo.
Maybe she's meant to be heartbroken. I don't know. It's quite like...
And also, I don't understand the timeline, because that sex scene where they knocked all that shit on the floor was quite a while ago, and he's left and reached his destination, and she hasn't cleared up that milk for about 3 days.
That's gross.
Right.
That's really gross.
And how much of that milk is soaked into the filter tip of the cigarette?
Oh. Mm. What? And turned.
Yeah, there's your heroin.
What? <Yeah. laughs> Fine.
Drinking a sour... tip of a cigarette.
Gross. Really gross. I don't like milk going everywhere anyway. I find that really upsetting.
Of course.
And anyway, he comes back. So it's Kevin Costner's on your porch swing. There's not very much you can do in that situation, I don't think. Like, it has to end this way. But the dancing, I'm really surprised at myself. I think it's undignified. Like, I like dancing, and I like it when people do dance, and I like it when people get a bit loose and crazy and we all dance. Mm. But I don't like watching Kevin Costner do this dance.
No, but I'm sure he didn't really like doing it.
Maybe
as
that's
well.
Why I don't
but I
like
guess the
it.
Whole idea is, you know, at the beginning of the film, he was a man who wouldn't dance and refused to dance.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She felt sorry for him. And so
I get it, but
they've
just...
got this moment. I mean, I agree with you. My problem was, I was just looking at the background and that fire hazard. There were so many candles next to so many flammable things, and they're bouncing up and down on the carpet. It was stressing me out.
Did you not like the final line on the porch? Because obviously Annie is very verbose in this film. She talks about William Blake. She talks about quantum physics and all the rest of it. And she starts to talk to Crash when they're sitting on the swing. And what does he say? He says, I don't want to hear about anything. I just want to be.
Yeah.
Which is such a beautiful way of saying...
Shut
the fuck up.
That Ronan Keating song, isn't it? You say it best. You do say it best when you say nothing at all.
I was like, and she's like, oh, he's back. And I'm like, he's just said, stop fucking talking.
That's so true. It's such a shame. Because when I heard him say, I just want to be, I was like, wow, No. But because she goes, oh, what, sorry, was I talking to her? She's like, no, shush now. You're going to ruin it.
She says she's
you've done so much voiceover in this film, Annie. Please stop.
And also, a person has to have the conviction of their beliefs. And it's like, if she's like, no, I'm a talker, so you fucking deal with it. When she's like, oh, God, I'm so sorry, was I talking too much? It's like, I don't like that.
That's why, it was clever that he left once already. There are rules, you see, Annie. You talk too much, there may be an opening on a team somewhere.
And that's the end of the film. Finally, that's the end.
I just want to mention Ron Shelton's worst moment on set. He said he got a call from the studio head during the shoot saying they watched the dailies, Costner wasn't working, and they were replacing him with Kurt Russell, who would be on a plane to set tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and he said he started panicking and sweating and stressing, and then the studio head on the other end of the phone started laughing, and it was actually Kurt Russell taking the piss, doing an impression of the studio head.
That's amazing.
Because he'd wanted Kurt Russell, and Kurt Russell couldn't do it. It was a scheduling thing. And they ended up working together. But what an evil prank. Yeah. But quite funny.
Very, very funny.
Number three on Sports Illustrated's top 50 sports movies of all time, Raging Bull.
Yep.
Second, Rocky.
Yeah.
Number one, Bull Durham.
Awesome.
Not a sports movie.
That's fantastic.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I didn't think I would be a natural fan of Sports Illustrated, but it turns out I am.
Oh, no, they're good. They're good. It's like Rolling Stone. It's good writing. Good writing.
All right. Should we do the bits?
Yeah.
I'll start with you, Alex.
I don't know what my best scene is.
Your enthusiasm is palpable.
One of the scenes where some baseball actually takes place. The bit where Nuke wants to throw his heater and Crash doesn't let him and then tells the catcher, the hitter, that it's a fastball. Fine.
Okay.
We appear to have a 12-year-old boy in the room with us at the moment with his arms crossed.
And you yawned. Honestly, you're unbelievable.
You didn't want to see me watching this film. Yawning all the time, arms folded, anger, tired.
Okay.
I've got two, and you didn't mention either of them, and I don't know which one to pick because I thought it was going to come up. I really like the first fight between the two of them. I think it's really unexpected where it goes.
It looks a bit West Side Story when they're like out back.
Yeah, but I just thought that was really funny. But I think what I'm going to go for is the scene that the studio was desperate to cut when they were complaining on the mound where all the players start talking about their problems and the coach has to come out.
Yeah.
It's just such a funny moment in sport. And Costner's trying to help everyone with their dramas. The manager gets involved. And I just think it's so funny. And yes, it shows what the studio knew about this film. They were like, that one's got to go first because that doesn't further the
plot.
About
the wedding present. About the candlesticks.
Everyone's got a drama.
It's really good.
Yeah. And the guy's, his
bat,
his wife cursed his bat.
Yeah.
I'm having that one as well. That's a great scene. Yeah.
I would say I think there's great moments. I don't know if there are like really it's like standout great scenes. And it's possibly because we don't have that big sports thing that you would be into.
Yep.
I did think Nuke throwing balls at Millie while she crouches down and points at her fanny was very funny. You didn't seem to think so, but I do think that's hilarious. But because of its rom-com, sort of it's perfect, but it's also unexpected in a rom-com when they're in the batting cage and it's all laid out. Is this going to happen or not? No. Fucking brilliant.
Like, and what's great about that is they're standing either side of those balls coming very fast and they have to be on their marks because if one of them moves, they're getting hit, which I think adds a layer of suspense
and
for me.
Also,
me
watching that, screaming at the telly, but good to let me down because it's unexpected. Clearly, he's holding a bat and she can come around, put her arms around his waist and say, this is how you do it. And I'd be like, big tick, because there you go. That's like legal in a rom-com. But they didn't do it. No. So
Saving it for Tin Cup.
Yeah.
Kevin Costner, apparently, according to Ron Shelton, because he played baseball in school, Kevin Costner, in college rather. Right. And he was a catcher. And he said when they were rehearsing or practicing or blocking a scene, Kevin Costner insisted on throwing out runners even if the cameras weren't rolling.
What does that mean? Throwing a ball?
It means he played the game seriously.
Oh, right.
Like, when the batter,
hits the ball.
Or doesn't hit the ball if they're bad at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Got it. Mm. Okay, cool. What's your most valuable whatever, Chris?
Ron Shelton. I think he did a good job.
Fair enough.
Well, he made the greatest sports movie of all time.
That's true.
So I've got to give some power to him. But there's so many lovely bits of dialogue here. Not all of it works, but there's so many lovely lines. There's so many unexpected moments. I think as a writer-director, it's a really great debut.
You.
Max Patkin.
Oh, really? Do you know they nearly killed him? I didn't tell you. Did you read this trivia?
Oh, no.
So they filmed a scene.
Wait,
so
shall we do the story behind him first?
Yeah, say who he is.
So Max Patkin is known as the Clown Prince of Baseball. He's the gangly guy at the start who does all the funny faces, like rubbery limbs. Fascinating story. So he, in World War II, he was stationed in Hawaii and he was pitching for a service team and he was playing against the legend in baseball, Joe DiMaggio. And Joe DiMaggio homered off the right-hander that Max Patkin threw. He got a home run.
Oh.
The best thing you can do
in
baseball.
Yep.
And in mock anger, Patkin threw down his glove and then followed DiMaggio around the bases. Everyone cracked up and that's how his career was born. And so he became this huge star. Like, he made over 4,000 appearances at various matches and just did that routine that you see briefly in this.
Yeah, yeah. It looked really annoying.
It was really funny.
I quite liked it.
I thought it was great.
I liked it. So they filmed a funeral scene for him and then cut it. Is my fact. Is my trivia.
Oh, I thought you meant they nearly killed him somehow.
Oh, God, no. They just did, because they had a wedding, so it's like, well, we could have a funeral. But it was too much. You did yours, didn't you? So mine's Susan Sarandon, obviously. It's really hard to make me empathise with and root for and maybe aspire to be a groupie. But man, she fucking did it. Like, it's that I went on such a journey. And what would you change, Alex?
More baseball, please. If it's going to be the greatest sports movie of all time, then it should be about sport more. I just think it needs to balance the sports drama with the relationship drama. It seemed inconsequential which sport provided the backdrop to this movie. We didn't spend enough time watching baseball. I wanted to see the winning streak put in jeopardy because of their pitcher and their catcher fighting over the same woman. You know what I was saying earlier about this idea of them not getting on because both of them want her? So you've got the Durham Bulls on that winning streak that is told about in voiceover, but you see the game and you see like them actually start to throw the game because of their anger with each other. Like, you know, all that stuff that we see done for a joke, basically, is actually done with the kind of like the relationship backdrop is the sort of like, oh my God, this actually matters now. The two plots interlink, the drama on the sports field, the drama in the romance, it's all part of the same thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that should be your act three. And in the end, they win the game. Newt gets to go to the majors, Crash doesn't, but he gets to get Susan Sarandon, Annie.
Yeah. That's I like that.
That's what I want. That's my act three. That's your fucking act three. There's your act three.
That's great.
Ron Shelton.
You hack. you?
More voiceover.
Get the fuck out of here.
I liked watching this time. Seeing the film wasn't really about sport. I mean, it's got all the philosophy of baseball and it's all anyone talks about, but I like the fact they just weren't interested in that. It's about these people and this romance. So I'm for that. But what I would also like to see for closure for me is Crash hit that home run that got that record that he didn't want.
Yeah.
Because I think he has achieved something by doing that. And I think it means more to him than he's letting on. And I think it would be satisfying if we're with him when he puts that to bed.
Yeah, we do see that.
Do we?
Yeah, you definitely see him hit the home run because Annie's voiceover says, and no one knew, but you see it on Kevin Costner's face as he's running around the bases and it means something
perfect
to him.
Perfect film then. Absolutely perfect film.
No, it passed me by because it's
done.
Such a little moment.
Well, unbelievable.
Wow, that's great. My change.
Perfect film. No change. Great.
No notes.
Yeah, the film I've hated more than any other in recent memory. Perfect film.
No notes. Oh,
wow. My change is the complete opposite of your change. Because if it's not, Alex, because if it's not going to be a sports movie and it is going to be a love triangle, she needs to go on the road trip so that we can get a bit more of the love triangle stuff because she takes a dip out of the narrative.
Girlfriends, wives and girl wags. Not wags. Yeah. Not the wags.
Yeah.
No, just her. No, she could fuck everyone. I don't know. Like,
no. Wrong. They need to come from behind in that classic way. Like... That should be a joke, innit? There you go. That would actually constitute a joke.
Go on, what were you saying?
And you know, this game that I think needs to take place, you know, they come from behind in that classic thing, Crash and Nuke, have like they're in the lead and then this argument erupts about Annie and they go behind and then somehow on the pitch, like, men, they sort it out.
They
sort it out and go from behind to win. And it's that win that gets Nuke into the majors. So Crash actively helped in the game get Nuke into the majors.
Yep.
Everyone's happy.
Yeah. Okay.
But what's yours?
That's it. She goes on the road trip. I don't like missing her out of the narrative for like 10 or 15 minutes because she's so central. It's basically her story because she gets all the fucking voiceover. So she takes a minute away from Crash and then she comes back. And what we've got then is, quote marks, the burgeoning attraction rom-com storyline, whereas we could have rivalry and ambushing each other and tripping each other up and whatever, whatever.
Mm.
That's it.
All right. That done? 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 Thank God!
So we're going to do a quiz. Right. And this quiz is, I'm going to give you the name of a baseball player.
Okay.
You've got to tell me if it's real or if I've made this name up.
Okay.
Because these American baseball players, they have some names. They really do.
Okay.
Okay. Starting with... Shooty Babbitt.
I'm going to say... Shall I start?
Yeah, well, you both do it.
Well, yeah, but we have to take it in turns about who goes first. I'll start this one then, shall I?
Yeah.
I'll go with true.
You can say true if you want.
Yeah, of course.
I'll say false.
True. Shooty Babbitt played for the Oakland Athletics. Vicky.
The Oakland A's. Moneyball.
Vicky.
Right. Yes. Stop doing that! Don't do that!
Roger Gently.
False. He's a cricketer.
I'm going to say false as well.
Yeah, he's false. Point to you both.
Why did that make you laugh so much?
He's not. He didn't. Ground beef.
True.
Also true.
No, I made that up. That was called ground. That was what's making me laugh. I read ground beef.
I'm thinking of a ground ball that you actually get that in baseball.
That's very funny.
Oh, wow.
That's what I was laughing at. I read ground beef and I changed what I was going to say. Urban Shocker.
Is this for me?
Yeah.
False.
True.
True. Urban Shocker played for the New York Yankees and the St. Louis Browns. Alex. Todd Grip.
True.
False.
False. Vicky got that one right. Todd Grip was Sven-Göran Eriksson's assistant manager for England.
Good.
Vicky, Stubby Clap.
True.
True.
Stubby Clap is true. Alex, Razor Shines.
True.
Also true.
Yeah, true. Alex wins it.
Yay!
Well played, Alex. That was 5-4.
5-4, just to...
Are you very close?
Just to be clear.
A lot like last week. Yeah, 1 point in it.
Yeah, but also, this is like your perfect thing. It's hardly fair, is it? Oh, the Auckland it with some...
Still beat you on shopping centres. Your specialist subject.
It's not my specialist... Don't. It's not my specialist subject.
Ground beef.
Right then. So next week, I don't know whether I've mentioned this already on the show, it's Chris's choices. Chris, have you got a clue for us?
Yes, my clue is look to the skies.
Ooh, that's nice. Look to the skies. Mm. Okay, that is your clue for next week's pairing. There'll be another one on the way on Twitter where we are at ClashPod. And that is it for this episode. Believe me when I say you want to subscribe to us if you haven't already and tell your friends about us. We are on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Check in with us on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and of course our lovely new YouTube account. We'll be back on Thursday when we're talking about a very good movie called Tin Cup. Speak to you then. Have a great week.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.